We'll call the meeting to order and Representative Mahoney moves House File 644. He recommended to pass and, well, Representative Stappy, come on up here and tell us if this bill will waive. We don't have quite to have a quorum yet, but come on up, have a seat.
Thank you.
And Representative Mahoney's moved the bill, so why don't you tell us, it looks like this bill does not have an appropriation. And it's been everywhere it should go already, Representative?
Mr. Chair, absolutely. This bill's been to state government ops and it's passed there. And prior to that, it was in local government and it passed there. And so now this is the last stop prior to the floor, from my understanding.
Okay.
The general register.
Representative Mahoney moves and House File 644 be recommended to pass and we refer to the floor. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you so much. It's my first appearance in front of this wonderful committee, and I'm hoping that it's a good experience as well.
Well, so are we.
Absolutely.
I'll tell you, you know, Representative Anderson's been tough on Democratic freshmen, so.
I have not.
Well, Mr. Chair, if I would have known that, I would have made sure I brought treats for the entire group. But I'm just thrilled to be here. But let me tell you, if I might, Mr. Chair, about this bill.
Go ahead.
This particular bill is what is commonly referred to as an enabling statute. And as an enabling statute, it just provides another tool for cities and or home room charters to adopt an ordinance that would require for contracts for construction or services to require the city residents or low-income city residents make up a minimum number or percentage of the persons employed by the contractor in the performance of the contract. Now, it also sort of put forward some guidelines or thoughts that a city or homeroom charter might think about when they're creating their enabling ordinance, if that's what they choose to do.
Yes.
I did not want to specifically handcuff, for lack of a better word, any particular person and say this is a mandate, because it's not a mandate. That's why the first line, it says may. And that's why it also didn't define some other things that a particular body would have to do, but giving them the room and the flexibility to do what's in the best interest of their city or homeroom charter if they so choose. We did have the League of Minnesota Cities testify before, and Ann is here. And their position was this, from my understanding, and she definitely is capable of speaking for herself, but that this is just another tool that cities could use in the event that they wanted a tool by which to accomplish this outcome or idea. There's also a representative here from the city of Minneapolis who also had an opportunity to speak at the last committee about this. And they concurred. And right now the city of Minneapolis, from my understanding, and they are definitely capable of speaking for themselves, but indicated that they've used, a number of ideas by which to accomplish this in by, you know, development contracts and those sort of things, but it would be great if they could, if necessary or possible, to have this as a tool. So, those are some, there in lies some background. I will say this too, Mr. Chair. The Senate has taken up this bill. It's gone through its proper committees, and it's now on the general register. I also have with me a testifier who could testify as to how this would practically happen if the committee so chooses. Her name is Elizabeth Campbell, and she's from Ryan Company.
Okay. Well, I don't know if we have any questions. Seems like a pretty straightforward bill. Do we have any questions? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Champion, I will not be hard on you. As we've met talked before, I think you have the best name for politics imaginable. I just have this couple of questions here. Does state law currently prohibit this kind of hiring practice? Or?
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, Representative, currently it does not, but some cities, as we've learned, are not necessarily clear if they do have the authority by which to create such an ordinance. And so it provides them with a tool and some clarity around what they could do in the event that they wanted to do it.
Okay. And Mr. Chair, Representative Champion, what happens if the contractor, the vendor, what happens if they don't get any applicants? If this ordinance were passed and they can't meet the threshold as outlined by the ordinance, then what happens?
You know, Mr. Chair, Representative, simply is that the contract goes forward. It is important from our vantage point of good public policy is one, to create a tool that cities can use, two, but to also send a clear message that we want there to be some considerations that you think is necessary in order to strengthen your cities and your communities. If a contract is unable to meet, let's say, for an example, that target, then they have the ability and the creation of a statute, of an ordinance by which to say, if you don't, you can still go forward. We are not telling the cities or homeroom charters exactly what to do if someone does not have the ability to meet that target. Because of the fact that it's an enabling statute, and so there's nothing that says that what they have to do. But cities are given the tools by which to create it themselves, create what they think is best, create what they think should happen under the various scenarios that they have that they're presented with.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Oh, Representative Ryder.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Champion, welcome to the committee, first of all. I'm just wondering if this statute was shaped and modeled on any existing statutes in other states, or, you know, what your research base for it was.
Representative Champion.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative, I can't think of any particular statute. It's from experiences working with contractors, but it's also looking at some of the great innovative ideas that the city of Minneapolis has been executing, and also understanding that there's a possibility for us to do more. You know, we often hear people say that our politics are local. I think when we even think in terms of strengthening our economic base locally, that's where it starts as well. I think it would be great for individuals that live in a certain place or space to actively participate in the revenue generating stream, so that they're able to improve the quality of life for not just them but their families, but strengthen their communities as well. Because if they're working, if they're doing something constructive, they can then patronize other businesses and other communities. So it's my understanding that Illinois have something similar, but I'm not exactly sure.
Yes, see no further questions, Representative. Oh, Representative Easton.
Sorry. I'm just kind of stuck on one thing. I know we think we heard this in another committee, Representative Champion, but it's on line 1.9. It says an ordinance that requires city contracts for construction or services to require that city residents or low-income city residents make up a minimum number or percentage of the persons. So there really is not a low income requirement here. It's just simply saying that it's requiring that there has to be a contractor that uses labor from the city. I understand that. I understand why that might be a good thing. And I guess the other question is we also live in a world of bigger than a city, and it's, you know, I suppose it's conceivable under this that a city could say 100% of the contracts have to be there isn't anything in here that would prescribe that the city can pretty much say whatever they want to say, so a city could quite frankly fence out anybody else from coming into that city to work. I guess I'm just looking at it and seeing that the language is pretty broad here. I'm not opposed to kind of the idea here, but it seems like this is a two-stall garage door, and what we're trying to find is a walk-through door here. I guess that's kind of what I'm just looking at, seeing it's an awful broad.
But Representative Eastman, if you look at it, I mean, it gives the city the you know, the option to draft up some type of ordinance that deals with contracts and construction and doesn't require them to do anything. And I imagine, knowing what Duluth I know has done this too, I don't know, Representative Champion said Minneapolis has, where they've set some standards for minimum wage and requirements and things like that. And it's been debated publicly and everybody has input, and you know, I think this is similar to that. So as Representative Champion said, I don't, who knows if it's actually necessary, but it's a clarification that it is a tool available, and I'm sure that anybody that does use this, if it should pass on the floor of both the House and the Senate, is going to be doing this publicly in an open meeting and trying to, you know, work things out. So, any further questions? If not,
Mr. Not a question, just a comment.
Okay, Representative.
I wanted to thank Representative Champion for bringing this bill forward. It's been long needed and asked today, and it'll really make a difference. You know, people who are served by people who look like them and can speak their language, it provides a much better public service.
Okay, Representative Mahoney renews his motion that House Bill 644 be recommended fast and referred to the floor. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion prevails. And the bill moves on. Thank you, Representative. Champion, Representative Eastland, would you move the minutes, please, of both the March 19th and the March 24th meeting? Are there any additions or corrections? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion prevails. Representative Winkler. And Representative Haas moves House File 1029 be recommended to pass and held over for possible inclusion in our big bill.
And I do so proudly.
Yes. Representative Winkler, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. House File 1029 is an appropriation for the continuing operations of the BioBusiness Alliance of Minnesota. This group is a favorite of the Bioscience Division, and when the bill passed out of that division, it passed out, I don't know if it was unanimous, but I don't remember a lot of no's, and with strong bipartisan support. The purpose of the bill essentially is to appropriate funds for economic development that actually works in Minnesota, for a group that has a plan, that has a regional basis for what it's doing, and has already, I think, some interesting things to show you today about how we're going to grow and expand the jobs that we need in the bioscience area. I don't know what you're going to do with your bill or your target, but I present this bill as a suggestion for a priority of where to spend the limited dollars that we have. So you'll hear from testifiers today about why the bioscience why the BioBusiness Alliance works and why it should be your priority.
Mr. Winkler, Representative Winkler, if your testifiers could kind of keep it short, we're aware of this program. Just quickly though, before we go, how much did you have in the bill 2 years ago? Do you remember what the appropriation was?
Yeah, Mr. Chair.
Was it the same size appropriation?
Yes, Mr.
Okay.
Chair.
All right, go ahead. Welcome to the committee. I just identify yourself.
My name is Dale Wallstrom. I am the CEO of the BioBusiness Alliance of Minnesota. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I am very pleased to be here. And as some of you may know, prior to accepting this position, I retired from Medtronic, where I was in business development for a number of years. But I'm appearing before you today to thank you for your past support. And ask you to support our continued efforts to grow this important sector of our state's economy. The BioBusiness Alliance in Minnesota is seeking $1.1 million in each year of the biennium to support the continued creation, recruiting, retention, and expansion of biobusiness here in our state. The BioBusiness Alliance has a proven track record of success as exemplified by the publication of a 20-year vision and roadmap for the state last January, which many of you attended that release called Destination 2025. We provided support and assistance to projects across the state, including such projects as Elk Run in the Pine Island area, the relocation of a medical device company to Minnesota from Massachusetts, expansion of a North Carolina company, a renewable energy company here in Minnesota, the establishment of Minnesota as the location of the International Renewable Energy Technology Institute, which is housed in Mankato, and the development of a systems dynamic modeling capability that is helping us to set policy and direction for renewable energy in the state. And those are just a few samples. And with that, I'd like to introduce Greg Mast. Greg works with the BioBusiness Alliance and is a expert in the area of renewable energy. What I'd like to do is ask Greg to very briefly demonstrate to you one of the outcomes of our work.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Greg Mass, Senior Program Manager of the Biobusiness Alliance in Minnesota. What I'd like to share with you briefly today is just four different scenarios which highlight one of the areas which the Minnesota Renewable Fuel Simulator can help us look at as we look in the area of trying to capture the diversity of opinions as it relates to the highly debated topic of renewable energy. And so within the model, one of the areas and main outputs is the total fraction of renewable energy use in the state. And so we're aware of the 25% by 2025 mandate. And so the base case within the model, when we were to run it, current trajectory places us, and I believe you should all have a copy of the slides as well, by 2025 in the base case, we achieve 20.5% of our goal. And so we are short by almost 5%. And so what the model allows us to do is to create scenarios. And so one of the scenarios that we have created and I've queued up for you today shows if we were to simply look at conservation. And so I'll queue this up as well. If we were to decrease our energy demand by 0.5% on an annual basis per year over the next 20 years, when we were to run that scenario through the tool, it shows that just simply with conservation, by 2025, we increase our usage of renewable fuel by almost 23%. And so if we were to add to that, for instance, increasing the utilization of biomass by 2025, I've also created a scenario there. So if we increase simply the use of biomass by 25%, what we see is as we run this out over 20 years, our total fraction of renewables increases to 26, just a little bit over 26%. This, therefore, shows that what the possibilities can be in helping to achieve the targeted mandate. And so if I were to also include conservation in addition to the 25% mandate for biomass utilization, ultimately what we find is over those 20 years, if we were to run the same chart, by 2025, we achieve over 28% total renewable usage, therefore showing what the possibilities can be with just those two factors included. So that's what I wanted to show you today, the power of what this tool can allow us to do.
Thank you. Question? Kate?
Thank you. I'm just looking at the graph there. One of the assumptions is 0.5% reduction in the annual growth in the conservation scenario. How realistic is that?
Mr. Mash.
Mr. Chair, Representative. The actual base case that was created by a team of experts throughout the state actually took the 0.5% annual increase in energy demand from federal data by the Energy Information Association. And so simply to show what a impact of conservation in the opposite direction could mean ultimately to our overall fraction of renewables in Minnesota, we've taken that same 0.5% per year and reverted it backwards to show the impact of conservation with that same assumption.
So there is no model that has been designed to describe how we can do that. It's just simply saying we're assuming if we could do that, this is what it would look like.
At a macro level, what I've shown here is exactly that. However, within the same model, we have the capability to drill into specific areas, whether it's in the area of biomass, wind, or solar, for example, of means by which specific technology can also help us achieve certain levels.
Okay, Representative Eastman, Representative Johnson, my roommate and I, we sit out on the deck every once in a while at night, and then we look on all the streetlights in St. Paul, and we wonder why they're there, because there's nobody walking the street. So we figure if you just turned off every other light, you could probably reach meet this goal. But and we, I'll bet you don't even have a yard light in your yard, do you?
No, I have to turn it on and off in my yard. We took the automatic one out a long time ago. But
we're the real tree huggers in the room, you and me.
Yes.
And I'll represent Winkler once to weigh in on this. Go ahead.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I don't think any of us would want to impugn your moral purity on the issue of the environment.
We'll table this bill right now. Representative Todd. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, just to Representative Eastland, I wanted to, the purpose of the model is to show scenarios of and help guide decision making so that we don't engage in kind of an ideological battle over conservation versus biomass. The idea is to show that to the best we can model the system, if we choose one over the other, what do the scenarios look like? And then that begins to lead to a different set of policy questions, such as how could you possibly get to that level of conservation versus how could you possibly develop that amount of biomass? So that's what the goal is to get people thinking about practical solutions rather than just arguments about what will work or what won't work.
Actually, Representative Eastland, this is good for you and me because it shows that Representative Mahoney and I are right on. We're either burning biomass in St. Paul and up in Virginia and Hibbing, and it looks like it probably has to be done in order to meet the 25 by 25 mandate.
Does heating your house with wood count?
Of course.
That's a, so I'm right on there too.
Me too. I got the smallest carbon footprint in the room. Okay, go ahead. Keep going. Welcome to the committee, ma'am.
Okay. Before I do that, in addition, I want to, Mr. Chair. Okay. In addition to developing decision-making tools, like Greg just demonstrated, which I want to reinforce, is just what was suggested by Representative Winkler, that we're trying to be able to get at the truth, to understand what is necessary to be done, so that appropriate decisions can be made and appropriate policies can be put in place. But in addition to doing those types of things, and there are more if you want to talk about them, we have also been supporting companies because that's the ultimate thing that we are charged to do, which is to create jobs and employment within the state. So in the past, in 2008, we supported 45 organizations or 45 companies. We checked with those companies in December. They are those initial 45 seed startups that we supported are now employing 283 people. And these companies reported in December that they were expected to grow to 850 people within the next 3 years, even in spite of the current situation. These companies are seeds for us that were planted in locations throughout Minnesota, including Worthington, Mankato, Wilmer, the Arrowhead region, Rochester, as well as the Twin Cities. To us, they were a test run that was conducted, as I mentioned, over the past 18 months so that we could learn how to do this well, to be able to help organizations to be successful. Now that we've published our 20-year vision and roadmap, all the resources that we've spent in the last 2 years trying to get this vision created so we knew where to go, the tools in place to know how to make appropriate decisions are now being put into supporting of companies. So with that, I'd like to introduce Lisa Jansa. Lisa is the CEO and founder of a company called Excellent Corporation, and she's here to demonstrate or talk about how we work with companies like hers. I might add, she's a serial entrepreneur. This is her fourth company. And
before we get going, ma'am, we have a question from Representative Downey and Clark. Okay, Representative Clark. Okay. Welcome to the committee. Identify yourself quickly, if you
can. Thank you. My name is Lisa Jansa. I'm chairman and members of the committee. I'm glad to be here. I'm currently CEO of a company called Excellent Corporation, which is a Minnesota-based pharmaceutical company developing a therapy for the treatment of diabetes. We are currently raising funds to conduct phase 2 human clinical trials, and we expect to be working with one major diabetes center in Minnesota and another center in Canada. Over the last month, BioBusiness Alliance has provided me with timely access to important stakeholders within Minnesota, and they've been instrumental in telling our story. What has impressed me about BioBusiness is the momentum they have helped create by opening the right doors quickly. Without them, our prospects for remaining a Minnesota-based company would be much lower. Although I'm personally committed to being in Minnesota, the future of Excellent Corporation will in large part be driven by our funding sources and their requirements. the BioBusiness Alliance really delivered, I think, on the vision for biosciences and also the roadmap. But what's much more exciting to me as an entrepreneur is the momentum they are now creating with prioritization and implementation. One example is the work they are beginning on a plan for obesity, metabolic disease, and diabetes, which isn't just a Minnesota problem, but a global epidemic. The breadth and expertise of leadership in this field in the state of Minnesota is not fully appreciated, and I believe the opportunity for industry growth is tremendous. We see ourselves, Excellent Corporation, as a potential catalyst for this industry growth, but it really requires something like BioBusiness Alliances as a valuable resource to take that vision and momentum and the platform and leverage it into the broader industry growth. So thank you.
Hey, Representative Dowling.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Actually, three questions I think are fairly quick. And the first one, you may have started to get at answering with the last testifier, but how much of the BioBusiness Alliance focus is on achieving this renewable energy target as compared to a broader kind of biosciences expansion in Minnesota?
Mr. Mack, do you want to take that one? Or Mr. Walton, who wants to take it? Mr. Winker. Representative Winker.
Whichever one you want to call me.
Representative Winker.
Representative Downey, they developed this model and tool, and that was actually a separate appropriation that was put together as a way to help guide decision-making. The model for renewable energy is just the first step and could be used for any number of different parts of the economy. So that was just where they started. Their mission is not to pursue the renewable energy standard. Their mission is to pursue job growth and industry growth in vital areas as they affect bioscience. They can talk about their four areas, but that's just the first place that they started because there seemed to be some momentum around that issue in the legislature and other places.
Thank you. That's fine for an answer. So my next question is, what's the role of DEEBS? I think the initiation of this group was largely a private consortium. So what's the role of the state in DEEB now that we're actually funding you? And I'm wondering if you could maybe comment on I guess possible risks of being overly attached to state government as compared to remaining in your more strictly private form.
Go ahead, Mr. Wall.
Mr. Chair. Okay, Representative, we are about 40% of our funding is coming from the state right now. In this past year, we're maybe a little bit more, maybe 45. The rest of it, we leverage that money to get donations from companies and private sector, other private sector entities like foundations. We partner closely with certain components of DEEBS, especially those who work in the bioscience area, people like Sherry Wahlberg, Kevin McKinnon, that group. They are limited in resources and they focus on larger companies. We focus on job creation, starting with the growth of new industries, so to speak, and companies that are associated with those industries, like what Lisa mentioned, diabetes and metabolic disease.
Okay, and one more?
If I could.
Go ahead.
Thank you. So in the modeling that you did on the energy independence, is cost figured into your model? I know I looked at some early renditions of cap and trade models that actually, frankly, looked really positive to me. And then I saw some of the cost equations weigh in on some of the regional models and they get up to $3,000 per person per year. And all of a sudden, the cost side of the equation becomes, precludes you from pursuing some strategies. So I'm wondering, how is cost figured into your model?
Mr. Mass, can you work that into your model?
Mr. Chair, Representative, cost is taken into account into the model. Prices of traditional fuel along with estimated prices of alternatives are included. However, I would just caution to say at a high level whereby we have not developed in detail specifically down the path of each technology area. And so at a macro level view, once again, we're able to identify trends and directionally the impact that fuel costs and prices would have.
So, if I could, Mr. Chairman, so cost to consumer is not factored into the model in terms of developing these various strategies, these scenarios that you plan?
Not in detail to the consumer, correct.
Thank you.
Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One of the issues that I'm always interested in whenever we're providing a subsidy to business is to know the return on that investment, the public investment. And you start to get at it with requiring reporting back in February, the use of the funds, and secondly, the number of businesses and jobs created, which is retained, extended, and so on. But what's left out of that, which I think you probably would want to include, is what's in 116J, and it's the legislation that says to tell us not only what jobs were created, but what the wages that are paid, and you know, the ones that are retained as you have here created, and so on. But without indicating what the wages are, it's a little bit shallow. So I'd like to work with you, Representative Winkle, maybe on either adding that to this existing legislation, or making this subject to 116J, which many of the programs that get corporate subsidies are, and in fact most of them are, I believe, that go through DEED right now.
Representative Winkler, I'm sure you'd be willing to work on that, right?
Mr. Chair, of course I'd be willing to work on that. I would have just put in a plug for Representative Norton's bill to actually require horizontal reporting across all of DEED funding categories, for this, which included wages, and I hope wage growth as a result of the DEED programs that they're administering. So I think that I think the relevant numbers are employment growth, wages, and wage growth as a result of these programs. So I certainly think that should be a part of it, and it would be consistent with what Norton wants to do with DEED.
Great. We can work together on that. Mr. Chair, I do have one other question.
Go ahead.
One of the other things I've always been interested too, when we provide subsidies, and this isn't just to this project, it's to the university and everywhere, when we provide subsidies to companies that are making pharmaceuticals or other medical devices, these are extremely expensive devices and extremely expensive drugs. And we're providing a public subsidy, which should, in my opinion, reduce the cost then to the consumer. But we never see that, and we never see that there's a differential reported. And so that's the kind of thing, again, what do we get as Minnesotans by having our tax dollars go to a biopharmaceutical? Does that then become a more affordable a drug or not? And so that's the kind of thing, since the pharmaceutical industries claim that their biggest cost is the research cost, we're helping pay for that with the public tax dollars, and how can we see a return on it? And that's the kind of thing that I'd like to see maybe also reported, and perhaps it turn out well in your model. I don't know.
Thank you. Representative Mahoney?
Well, excuse me, Mr. Chairman. I just want to know if we can.
I just want to know if we can
put that into the mix of what we want to work on together.
Mr. Chair, Representative Clark, I think we can. I think the hard part with this is that the BioBusiness Alliance is a supportive organization that's trying to build industry clusters and helping to make sure that the medical device industry, for example, remains strong in Minnesota. They're providing a very indirect subsidy to companies that may or may not be directly doing the kind of work that you're talking about. So I think that it may be possible to include some kind of information about that at a higher level, but I don't know that the BioBusiness Alliance would be in the best position to do the reporting on that.
Okay, let's talk about it.
Thank
you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate you calling on me and Representative Winkler bringing this forward. We in the Bioscience and Workforce Policy Subdivision did not rank our priorities, but I know that this is probably one of our top priorities and is really, really key. This funding is really very key to continued growth in the bio industry. So that's not a question, just a comment for the committee.
Okay. Members, to the witnesses, Representative Winkler, it was actually 1.75 over the biennium last time is what it ended up, and it was a one-time appropriation, so we'll see what we can do. We don't have much money. Representative Eastman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'm going right down to the reporting section on the bottom where Representative Stark was talking about. What is the best indicator for the economic growth in this arena? I mean, is it jobs? Is it the number of businesses? Or what is the best indicator? And is that included in here? I guess I'm kind of curious about that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Eastman, we asked those questions in the bioscience subdivision, and when you had a couple of testifiers come in from the University of Minnesota to talk, economists to talk about what the effective measures are, and what they talked about were employment growth, wages, and wage growth. So where you are in absolute terms, and then how you're growing in total employment and wages.
Okay, one more question.
Yeah,
one
well, more. I guess then it goes back to, I think, what Representative Clark was talking about. There's nothing in here that requires any reporting on wages. It's just
and
a number of jobs.
And members,
yes.
We're holding this over for possible inclusion, and Representative Connors, Representative Clark is going to work with Representative Winkler on that.
Yeah.
And Representative Easton, you can have some input and anything else you want to see in the reporting. With that, then, we'll lay the bill over for possible inclusion. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Representative Kahn, Representative Slocum moved that House Bill 1479 be recommended to pass, and this has to go to taxes, I guess. And we refer to finance the taxes. We can go right to taxes from here. Okay. And we refer to taxes. Representative Kahn, welcome to the committee, and got a couple of young folks that want to testify. Welcome.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman and members, first of all, I do have an amendment which they suggested to clean it up. We didn't distribute it, but it's simple enough. I think it's simple enough. I hope I can do it as an oral amendment.
We'll try it.
This would be on page 1, line 10, after 1, insert, is a Minnesota resident who? There is a desire to limit this at start just Minnesota residents.
Could you run that by us again?
Okay, and I'll give you the speech. Page 1, line 10, after the 1, you want to insert, is a Minnesota resident who then graduated from a post-secondary.
Okay.
So it's limiting it to Minnesota residents rather than everybody.
All righty. The members understand that?
Yes.
If not, if they do, Representative Slocum then moves that oral amendment. Is a Minnesota resident who? Or would it be who? No, it would be who, not whom, right? Representative. Okay. We have that. Motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails. And Representative Kahn, since this came from finance, it has to go back to Representative Carlson,
okay,
or at least to get on paper to get re-referred to taxes.
I'm glad you understand this.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Representative Rizzolino. We've heard a lot about the incredible burden higher education costs are having on students, particularly in the light of student loans. And I have, this is, we're not leading, we're not, oh, could we give out the, give the page. This is actually a time when we're not asking Minnesota to be a leader, we're trying to follow something that is already being successfully done in the state of Maine. And I have two young men from MPIRG, which is present on many campuses in our area, Ryan Kennedy and Joshua Winters, and they've also brought a bunch of other students with them to watch us today, and maybe people who are accompanying them could raise their hands in the audience so we get to be the further interest. And I would actually, handout of the material they've given to me has come out, and I would like to turn it over to them to explain the bill.
Welcome again. They've both been here before. We're happy to see a presence by the university students and graduates. So, welcome, and just identify yourself and go ahead. Start.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Ryan Kennedy. I am a senior at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities. I'm a student with MPIRG, the Minnesota Public Interest Research Group, and I'm also the chair of the University of Minnesota Student Senate, representing students at all the University of Minnesota campuses. Just jumping right into it, this bill is a tax credit for student loan debt relief. Essentially, what we really want to do here is remove an unnecessary burden for college graduates that prevents them from doing a lot of things in life right when they graduate. If you graduate from college and you have 20, 30, 40, you know, we even have students with $70,000, $80,000 graduating from public school in debt once they graduate, and that's preventing them from doing things that they would otherwise be doing, like buying a house, getting married at younger ages, and they're having to push that back farther and farther, and they're also not being able to take jobs that they would normally take. If you're a psychology major right now and you want to go in and be a social worker, well, if you graduate with $60,000 worth of debt, you you know, it's very hard to do that right out of high school without, you know, having that debt follow you for years and years following your graduation. We also like this piece of legislation because it removes a barrier for low-income students attending college. A lot of high school graduates, you know, you're looking at going to college, but, well, you know, what are the benefits, you know, what are the consequences? And in a lot of cases, people don't seek higher education because they're afraid of the debt or they can't pay for it on the front end. And so this would allow them to say, you know, if you do take on this student loan debt, essentially if you stay and work in the state following your graduation, not only will you be contributing to our workforce, not only will you be an educated part of our workforce in Minnesota, but you'll also be able to claim this tax credit so that you can pay off your student loan debt. And like I said, it creates a more educated workforce in the state. It'll help stimulate our economy. It'll, you know, help us regain our competitive advantage over our neighboring states. And as you can see, a lot of this is laid out in Maine's economic analysis. We are working with an economist at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities to get our economic analysis. It's forthcoming. We should have it within the next couple weeks here. But we do have a preliminary analysis that basically comes up with similar results as Maine's, and you have Maine's in front of you. And essentially the big key figure that our economist has come up with is that the cost-to-benefit ratio for our state, by implementing this program, our state will benefit 30 to 50 times the cost of this program. The cost-to-benefit ratio is 30 to 50 times in our favor. And also, like I said, I'm the chair of the University of Minnesota Student Senate. We have their support representing the approximately 70,000 students in the University of Minnesota system. And I mean, that's all I have to say for now.
Okay, welcome. Thank you. My name is Josh Winters. I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Public Interest Research Group, or MPIRG. First, very briefly, I just wanted to say thanks to the chair and the committee for hearing this important bill and discussing the issue of higher education, the debt burden, the very real debt burden that students face coming out of a higher education institution. I also want to briefly thank Ryan, because MPIRG as an organization works to build student leaders who are active in civic life. And I would just say that Ryan has demonstrated a lot of leadership and initiative and kind of pushing this whole ball forward and even suggesting the idea that we look at a very innovative solution that Maine have put forward to addressing the higher education debt problem. That said, MPIRG is a statewide organization. We have represent 40,000 fee-paying students across our 8 chapter campuses across the state. We also have 20,000 community members, and we are a non-partisan, non-profit organization. I would just like to start by saying, too, that there's just a dearth of interest in terms of the students as we talk to them about the higher education debt problem. I'm sure this committee is very well acquainted with that, but just to say that there's a lot of excitement on the campuses that we work on and others we don't work on as we discuss this issue with other students who are facing these very real burdens coming out of college. They're excited by the opportunity that this would present to them and the prospects it means for them. We do believe this is a workforce development tool. We recognize that these are hard economic times, but we at the same time believe that this is the most critical time that we can be making investments in our future workforce, our workforce development, and in the education, frankly, of students across the state. And we view this as an investment because all indications are, based on the preliminary economic analysis and the final one that we indicated was forthcoming, that this will pay for itself on a year-to-year basis within the next decade. And furthermore, would make up the cost for the first couple of years, again, further down the line, and that economic analysis will trot out the actual timeline for that kind of investment to be repaid. So, lastly, I would just like to say that we believe that this will set the stage for Minnesota to retain a strong, educated workforce, allow us to keep that competitive edge in a hyper-competitive global economy, and we would appreciate any thought and discussion you give to it, and we hope we have your support. Okay, Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question about line 1.11, where you, I understand that if you graduated from a post-secondary educational institution located in Minnesota, but I'm just curious about those students who leave Minnesota for schools but then come back. I'm just wondering about why that is included in the bill.
Representative Kahn, do you want to handle that one?
Just, Mr. Chairman and Representative Poppy, I think we could say that it's of advantage. I mean, I'm a perfect example of somebody who got all my education at the expense of other states or...
Well, I don't know if you're a perfect example, Representative Kahn.
Yes, I didn't cost the state of Minnesota anything, and the federal government, too. And but the example is, at this point, I think we're looking at trying to limit it so that we could, so that to cut down, because we do admit and we know we're going to have the burden of going to the tax committee where the tax chair has expressed in fairly strong terms what she thinks about tax credits in general.
Actually, supposed to eliminate the AmeriCorps, the little exemption for those that serve in AmeriCorps to have their taxes reduced from their stipends.
I think that limitation is really just to start from someplace and to make sure, because we do know that there is an initial expenditure until it starts paying itself back, and I think the main experience was that it starts paying itself back in 3 years and completely covers its cost in 10 years, really, in 7 years.
Representative Kettner.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Do you have a fiscal note on this? Because I'm assuming that it'll come out of the general fund.
Representative Kahn, do you? Or I'm sure taxes will probably have a credit, you know. Yeah. We'll have a note. And taxes, they'll have a note there.
Okay, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Kahn, could you define residency? Would this occur after they graduated? During their coursework?
Chairman, residency is completely defined in the higher education system. You don't get to pay resident credit unless that's well defined.
So what about reciprocity?
Yes, and we cover reciprocity. We cover the Minnesota. We're covering the Minnesota students who are going to a reciprocal institution.
Mr. Chairman,
go ahead.
Don't we also have reciprocity with Canada?
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe we have any. Do we have reciprocity with Manitoba?
Limited
with Manitoba. Yeah. I know you're worried about those Canadian hockey players, President.
So what we're saying, they would qualify for this.
I think so.
I don't think it would under the bill. It's tax residency, Representative Detmer, in the bill.
Okay.
Representative Eastman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm looking at on page 1, line 1.18, number D down there, qualified educational loan. What is that? It has a meaning given section 221 of the Internal Revenue Code.
Go back to you. Know the answer to that. We've got it right here.
Mr. Chair, I happen to have a copy of U.S. Code Title 26, Section 221, and a qualified educational loan is defined as any indebtedness incurred by the taxpayer solely to pay qualified higher education expenses, which are incurred on behalf of the taxpayer's spouse, or any dependent of the taxpayer as of the time the indebtedness was incurred, or which are incurred within a reasonable period of time before or after the indebtedness is incurred, and which are attributable to education furnished during the period which the recipient was an eligible student.
Sounds like an internal revenue system.
That's what it is, Representative.
Yeah, I guess I'm just thinking about how is this going to affect people's ideas or attitudes about paying for school. Is there going to be a benefit in increasing their amount of debt as opposed to paying up front if they can get this credit on the backside? I don't know what could happen here in terms of. There's kind of a benefit that you're going to get if you're going to get a credit off your taxes. Is this a credit right off the tax, or is it a credit just off of the your adjusted gross income?
There's no back. I believe it. I think it's a tax credit. But
okay.
So we would have a standing appropriation in taxes.
I guess target. Mr. Chair, I'm looking at it and trying to understand how.
it would be a benefit to people actually to take out loans.
What?
Here, this is it's a disincentive for people to pay for their education, because if they take out a loan and pay for it later, they can take 100% tax credit on the amount. There should be some benefit in here to offset this for the person that's paying for their education. There should be some kind of a tax benefit for somebody that's paying as they go. This is only addressing one small piece of the, and maybe you address the rest of that. I'll leave it as a test fire.
Mr. Chair and members, I think Ryan probably would have the best response to that.
Okay. Mr. Kennedy, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, our intention is to only give this tax credit for subsidized student loans. That would be the Stafford subsidized, the Perkins, and the federal direct subsidized loans. Those three are, essentially need-based loans. So that if your parents' income is, $200,000 a year, and they can, buy the formula set out by, the Department of Education, the Minnesota Office of Higher Education, if they have the ability to pay your entire education, you wouldn't qualify for these loans. So it kind of eliminates the moral hazard, and that was something that we had intended on addressing, as we have been addressing it since the beginning, is that you would have already qualified for these loans, and at that point you would have already been identified as needing that income to go to college. And so,
Mr. Chair, that wasn't what the Section 221 in the Internal Revenue Code said. It didn't specify those loans. It was much broader than that.
I think
that's an unclear piece in here as far as I would see. The other thing is there's a lot of things that could happen. I mean, you might have a rich grandma that's going to pay for your education. Your parents might not make that much money, but it would be a disincentive for her to pay for it. And they might as well take out a loan and pay back the loan and get 100% tax credit on the loan. I mean, there's just some issues here that I think are really hanging out that could really be played with. Seem unclear to me.
Representative Ephraim, you sit on the tax committee with me, so this is going to have to be visited there, and I'm sure you'll make your points. That is a good point.
I think.
Representative
Mr. Tim, I thought that the language we had covered the fact that it had to be based on those need-based education loans.
I don't believe it doesn't, so you're going to have to work on that before tax.
We will pick that up.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I will point out that it takes a degree of freedom away, because you have to agree, you have to stay in the state and stay in the state working for 10 years. So we did talk about the fact that that even in cases where someone might, because of marriage or something like that, want to go.
Mr. Chair, I don't think it says 10 years in here, does it?
Go ahead, Mr. Chairman, Representative. That is also another piece that we had language drafted on the Senate side. To cover that issue, that would have been as an amendment to you today. Unfortunately, when we had that language drafted, it was drafted incorrectly for the amendment. So that's also something that we need to build in here. But it is absolutely our intent that it's only subsidized, and that that you are required to stay in the state for 10 years, and your repayment schedule for your loans would be over that 10-year period, and then you would only get essentially a tenth of that every year that you stay.
Representative
Mr. Chairman, I think Representative Eastland covered my points, but I actually do remember when I was in college in highly inflationary times, and I took out my student loan and maxed out on student loans every year, simply because money market interest rates were much higher than the interest rates that I was going to incur on my guaranteed student loan. So I think as we approach what likely are inflationary times ahead, that these potential abuses that Representative Eastland points out really should be tightened up in the language, and it sounds like they've contemplated some of that. But
evidently it's in the Senate bill. So with that, members, Representative who spoke him, re-renews her motion that House File 1479 be recommended to pass and re-referred back to the full Finance Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion. Representative Haas, you have two bills. Which one would you like first? You have a number of people in the audience, I believe, so do you want that bill first?
You can do that bill first.
And Representative Haas, that would be which That would be 1104.
That is correct.
Representative Haas moves House File 1104. He recommended the pass and held over for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill. Welcome to the committee for your testifiers, and Representative Haas, every testifier over these, if you lose $100,000.
Go ahead.
You know, as excited as I am about this program, it really is hard not to just bubble over the top with the program. One of the things that I hope that my testifiers will do, especially Mark Zachary, executive director, is point to the fact that the Boys and Girls Club fits this bill, but it's such a comprehensive program that we have to gear into and focus on where they're hitting our mission for economic development. And with that, I will give you our testifier.
Thank you, Representative Haas. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, hi, my name is Mark Zachary, a proud director of the Boys and Girls Club of Central Minnesota out of St. Cloud, but I wear another hat. For the past 20 years, I've been a county commissioner in Stearns County and served with Representative Haas on our Workforce Center Board. So I'm very familiar with what's happening in that workforce development area, and I'm here to tell you that you've had a great return on your investment in these young people who've been trained at the Boys and Girls Club. We have four major programs in this career development, workforce development. One is called Career Launch, Job Ready, Goals for Growth, and the Smart Moves program. Now, if you think about Boys and Girls Club statewide, there are over 61,000 club members. But in this program, over 7,000 have graduated from our workforce development program. We have a couple of those graduates with us today, and they'll talk to you in just a minute. 2,000 teens in Minnesota just in the last 2 years are fully prepared for the workforce. They know how to write a resume, how to interview, how to get work done on time, and to produce at their work sites. Nearly two-thirds of the young people we serve are from ethnic minorities. These are bright kids, African-American kids, Native American kids, Asian youth, who just need a helping hand. Your investment in the last 2 years averaged $150 per youth that graduated from the program. Imagine $150 of state dollars to make this happen for these young people. It's a great return on investment. And we're so proud to be able to report those results to you. These programs directly tie to the goals that DEED set for workforce development. I think that's the beauty of this, is that it is a good fit. Representative Steve Gottwald is saying right on, because he knows how successful these programs have been. And thank you for being here to hear this important message.
And
I think it's better if
he'll be helping us raise some money this session.
I think so. Hopefully.
So with that, and with that intro, I'd really like to have the youth themselves tell you a little bit about how these important programs have affected their lives, changed their lives, and made them ready for the work world. And in your brochures, you see a picture of Tatiana. Would you like to tell a little about your experience?
Welcome to the committee, and young ladies, and don't be nervous, because we're not as scary as we look. And just identify yourself for the tape when you start talking.
My name is Tatiana Thompson. I was involved in Career Launch. I've been a member of the Westside Boys and Girls Club for about 10 years. When I was there, I got involved in Career Launch, and that helped me get a job on the front of the brochure. It's me, and I'm working at Chuck E. Cheese. And before that, I got a job at Checkers, and Club helped me get that. And also, Career Launch, it helped me with my interview process, tips on that, how to get a job, like do's and don'ts. And it helps me with the application process and, like, getting out there and exploring new jobs. It really opened my eyes to the whole career world, I guess. But also Club, it helped me balance my time. And I was employed at two jobs at one time, and being a full-time student in high school, that's not easy. So the club helped me get my homework done on time, and they, when I didn't have rides to my work, they would give me rides home at night. So they just really helped me, and when I was having some family problems, club was always there where I could go and talk to the staff. They're really open. They don't criticize. They just try to help, and I think some programs are really good for teens out there who get a second chance at life and lead down a better road. So,
thank you very much. Representative Murphy, do you have a question on the program or for Tatiana?
Program.
We'll just go then and we'll have the other testifier. Welcome.
My name is Kelly Jones. I'm a member of the Westside Boys and Girls Club. I've been a member for going on 9 years now. I've been in 3 of the 4 programs. I've been in Smart Moves, Job Ready, and Career Launch. I've been in Smart Moves ever since I was like 8 years old. And that the Smart Moves programs really, really helped me better my character. It taught me like what type of attitudes I should have in life. And Job Ready, that was a very big program for me because it helped me get a job when I was 13 years old. And it wasn't just like a program I went to only because I wanted a job. I also wanted to like know a lot of stuff, and they taught us, we had interview skills, we did resumes, we talked about how to dress and then how to act at jobs. And also Career Launch was kind of similar to that, except for it was teaching us like what type of schooling and what type of programs we could get into to help us with our career in life. We went on a lot of college field trips, and a lot of executive people from companies came to tell us their story about and give us tips on to help us on our career path. And yeah,
a good experience. Thank you both for telling us your experience and benefits from the being involved with Boys and Girls Club. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can we, sir, go back to your statistics again?
Yes.
On the diversity that you gave us?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
There's a pie chart showing our membership profile.
All right. These sites for workforce development.
Yes.
Where are they?
Let me refer you to
1,000 students?
Let me refer you to this brochure. These are clubs located all over the state of Minnesota. And do you not have this one? Oh, it's on the back of the one mark where potential meets opportunity, not the individual.
They don't have that one.
We only let Representative Haas give us one brochure at a time. I have enough with me. I'll be sure you get that. And that gives you a nice map of where the clubs are located. And each of those clubs took part in one or more of these job development programs.
Okay.
Does that help?
Yes, that helps, and I'll look at the brochure. And then, do you train people with disabilities?
Yes, our clubs are fully accessible, yes.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Further questions, then we'll just hold this over for possible inclusion. We appreciate your testimony today.
Thank you very much.
Representative Haas, then you might move House File 1901.
I would like to move House File 1901 for possible inclusion. Thank you.
Okay. And these are youth, this is for youth programs. Members, Representative Haas moves House File 1901. He recommended to pass and held over for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill. And there is an attached or a handout that shows us the history of this committee since Representative Park probably chaired it, Representative Gunther and Nornes chaired it. As you can see, there's general fund money at one time, and then we moved to Workforce Development Fund money. Representative Haas, can you tell us, let's see here. Oh, maybe I'm the only one that has it. No, everybody should have it.
Are we going to the next bill, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, we're on 1901 now. So welcome to the committee. Your testifiers, have a seat. And go ahead, Representative.
Thank you very much. I have an amendment.
Okay, we have the 0224 amendment.
To put that in order, it is on page 195, delete 10 million and insert 3.5 million. The 10 million figure was from a few years ago when this program was larger, when money was more available. On the past bill, I'd like to also note that we reduced the program by 15% because we wanted to be a team player. We just could not take it down to zero because we're going to hurt a lot of people if we do so.
I meant to comment to commend you, Representative Haas, because the governor did zero out the program, and your bill was it was $1 million a year, I think, and you knocked it to 900,000. So
this is a 1104 is a youth program.
Should we move the amendment?
Thank you very much.
All those in favor, Representative Haas moves the 0224 amendment. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. That motion prevails. Now the bill.
Thank you very much. This is the MYP program, Minnesota Youth Program, and this is a well-tested, well-documented program that would meet the test of any spread page that you would take out and look at what you wanted to do and look whether what it was done or not, because it does the job, and it does it in 87 counties and by 16 different workforce centers. I'm very proud to be presenting this bill to you because I know we're going to take students and we're going to put them up into useful citizens. This works not only in job skills, but it also works in behavioral skills. And I have testifiers with me today that I would like them to introduce themselves and tell us about the program, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Norm Champ. I'm the Vice President of the Tree Trust. I believe you have a brochure about our 2008 program. We're a nonprofit, metro-based. Last year we employed, through the MYP program, 772 youth in the metro area. This year we hope to employ another 772 and possibly go a little higher. I see the Minnesota Youth Program, the legislation, as the entry-level drug of workforce development. Almost all of our youth in the program are first-time jobs, first-time employees. And once they get a job, they want a job when they go back to school in the fall. And I'm really proud to have been involved with this program for years. And I brought with me Cortland Johnson, who was a participant last winter in our program. And he did such a good job, we made him a supervisor of a crew of youth. In fact, his smiling face is on the cover of that report that we have. So Cortland can speak both as a participant and as a supervisor of other MYP participants working in Minneapolis last year.
Corbin, welcome to the committee, and tell us how you like the program. I see you got work gloves on, even so you know how to work, huh?
Cortland was working this morning. We pulled him in, and he brought his crew that's graduating tomorrow from the program, and he'll be going back to work when we're done.
Okay.
Not that this isn't work.
Welcome.
Thank you. Sorry, I smelled so bad. My name is Cortland Johnson. I'm from North Minneapolis. I'm 21 years old. I went through the Minnesota Youth Program when that was my first job ever. And I didn't have a lot of guidance. I didn't have a lot of influences besides the people that I lived around in North Minneapolis. And when I got up and seen a lot of people who were going to school and going to work, and they still come home and they struggle and they talk about all these things, you know, I didn't feel like putting my time into the job and going out here and working. So I turned to other solutions and things to go out here and do. So I met Tree Trust. Tree Trust changed my life around completely. I think they saved my life more than changed my life because I could be dead or in the penitentiary. I think that these programs like this are so much helpful for people who live in the inner city who face so many things that you wouldn't imagine having to face every day, you know. And one of the biggest things I think about is how, if I didn't have this program, where would I be right now? What would I be doing? It has really been something I can say that with y'all being able to help me, I'm able to help other people. Now I spend my time trying to figure out how can I change somebody else's life, how can I get them on the right path. But without influences where I come from, having peer pressure, having people you see, the man who sells drugs, he rides in a better car than your mom and she goes to work every day. That guy does nothing, you know. So when you have those types of things, and youth are influenced by what they see, you know, and I think that the influences that we have, TV and all these types of things, that the community we live in, you really don't have too many people say, hey, I'm going to get them, go give me a good job, you know, because you don't have that type of guy, you know. And where I come from, I didn't have that. Now I had a crew leader who stuck with me. She made me become a great young man, you know, a person that society likes. So that's how I go out here and I try to help other people, you know, because I honestly go and when I see people standing on the corners now, you know, I just wish I could get them a job. But you can't get somebody a job. They have to want that too, you know. So I think a part of having these services available for people that who don't know about some of them, and having people who are open to go out here and help people is great. And I think if we wouldn't have these type of services, it would be a lot of more problems and chaos. And I think that as a supervisor, I can say I know I helped at least one person out of the 16 kids I had this summer. The guy was missed 2 days of work, and the only 2 days of work he missed, he went to jail. I seen him around November time, and he told me that he was doing great in school. He's on a roll now, you know. He isn't hanging around the same people he was hanging around. And I just think that me as being able to help him and work with him this summer is part of the influences that had him be able to change, you know, because I was pretty hard on him about going to jail. I've been there, done that. So I just think that these programs are great. I thank y'all for having this available for people. And it's states that don't have these type of programs, who don't have this help, and they aren't as lucky as we are who live in Minnesota.
Well, thank you very much for coming today, Courtney, with your crew, and we appreciate the job you're doing. How good are you with a chainsaw? I got some things that need cutting, you know. I'm really good with a chainsaw. I might be little, but you should watch me throw the saw around. You pretty good with it?
Yes, I'm pretty good. I might could teach you a few things.
No, I don't think so. Hey, I can twist them, I can turn them, I can lay them down where I want them to go. So I'll teach you a few things. Any questions?
Yeah, you've got to be very careful that the chair wouldn't be hugging the tree at the time you're cutting.
I hug them before I look up. You know what I'm talking about, Carly. You got to see which way they're going.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Great testimony.
Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative House, I just love that you're bringing these programs forward. They're so important, and I think the investment is really great. And
very human investment.
I have two questions for Mr. Champ. One is, do you know what the investment is per child or per young person in this program?
I believe BEAD has that on their site. I think it's around $1,000 per...
Okay.
For you, sir.
I just I ask that because I know these programs can stand up, as you were just talking about, to the cost-benefit analysis. I just think it would be helpful if we had those cost-benefit analyses right out there, because then we can see how much we're saving.
Someone smarter than me.
Representative Clark, we can probably get that information.
Yeah,
we've got another bill.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm sorry to interrupt Representative Clark. There is actually a handout in your packet that's titled the Minnesota Youth Program Annual Summary. And it has, under the measures, it has the cost per participant and the return on investment. And then each of you has attached to that statewide summary information about the youth programs that are in your specific counties that you represent.
Mr. Chairman, I did have one other question for the chair.
Go ahead.
Very quick. I see. Okay, thank you. Thank you so much. I'm being showed all of this. Thank you. I think I saw that you had applied for some youth bill dollars in this next round. Is that right?
Yes, we did. A federal youth bill grant.
Yeah.
You should hear about that in June.
And the reason I asked, Mr. Chairman, is I was a little dismayed to know that it's already closed as of January 15th, so you're one of the folks that made it under. This will be your first time working with youth bill, I take it?
We had a HUD grant from youth bill when youth bill was under, moved to Department of Labor. This will be our first Department of Labor.
Mr. Chairman, the reason I'm bringing this up is I really hope that we can make use of all these federal grants that are coming in, and some of them have deadlines that are fast, some of them close by, and I think they will really help this committee with our budget.
We're going to try, and of course a lot of our money comes through, and it's
goes out on a federal formula to workforce centers, but there's some money that may be available to us. We know the importance of these programs, as Mr. Johnson just explained to us. So, and I'm going to get you up north on my 3 points, too. Okay, with that, we later. Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, I won't take time, but I'll talk to Representative Hawes.
Well,
Commissioner.
So then the both bills have been laid over for possible inclusion. Representative Thiessen. Representative Mahoney moves House File 785. Thank you both for coming. And Representative Thiessen, we got a Representative Mahoney's bill yet too that we were going to try to get to today, and Representative Norton is this. So,
Mr. Chair, I'm just going to turn over the witnesses.
There you go. Representative Mahoney moves 785. He recommended the pass and held over for possible inclusion. Welcome.
Mr. Chair, my name is Maureen Gustafson. I'm the Executive Director of MnWorks, which is a statewide initiative to assist people with disabilities in obtaining meaningful employment. In our current environment, we are all encouraged to economize, combine resources, and share services. MnWorks is an example of an entity that is doing just that. We assist rehabilitation service programs across the state to share efficiencies in assisting people with disabilities in obtaining employment. Some examples of how we do that is by responding to the state RFP program. There are several opportunities for janitorial, for digital imaging, for recycling through the state, but our organizations don't have the resources to take advantage of those. So what we do is we combine their resources to respond to state, county, and city bid opportunities to get them work. One example of this is last January, there was a statewide RFP to have someone clean all of the National Guard armories across the state. We were able to assist Northern Minnesota in obtaining some work in that area, including those National Guard entities, by pooling several communities into one bid. We are also proactive in approaching organizations. We take initiatives to the state for them to consider us in areas such as recycling. Many of our organizations have invested in shredding equipment, in sorting equipment, in the ability to go and pick up various types of recycling materials, and then they do that on their various sites. So this is a whole new initiative that they're able to do, and we need to make cities, counties, and states aware of that, that they have this capability and they are trained to do that. So we respond to bids and we proactively approach to provide suggestions for how we can be of service. Our organization actually is possible through shared efficiencies. Accessibility in Minneapolis is our address and provides us with office space. Wakosa in St. Cloud is our fiscal agent. Mendaca provides to us a heavy of services, which is a professional organization. MRCI in Mankato assists me with some office assistance. It's just a very collaborative process in order to assist people with disabilities across the state. In our first year, we've been able to establish our website, create our business plan, do a capability survey where we can see what all of the entities across the state have equipment to do, the kinds of training they've conducted. We've done presentations to purchasers, a variety of site visits, and then created a committee and a structure that includes people from all across the state to have input and participate. In the future, we hope to continue to reach numerous entities, continue to provide equipment and summaries of what they can do and market those opportunities, expand the number of communities that we've been able to reach and include, and obtain 3 to 5 contacts within the next year in order to continue to sustain ourselves. I'm going to let one of our organizations introduce themselves.
Hi, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jim Rooker. I'm the chair of the Minnesota Board of Directors. Members of our Board of Directors represent organizations that serve people with disabilities, and they represent over 275 member agencies who work with over 14,000 people with disabilities across the state. I currently work at a VA training and rehabilitation program in Blaine called Achieve Services. Achieve focuses on employment for people with disabilities, and that is the focus of MnWorks. So our hope is, as a collaboration with MnWorks, our agencies, such as the one that I work for, will be able to compete on large contracts, which we wouldn't be able to do on our own because we're too small. But with the coordination and support of MnWorks, all the agencies across the state would be part of one grouping to be able to compete on the larger contracts that are being proposed by the state government. This is a great opportunity for all of our agencies, but most importantly, it's a great opportunity for the people that we serve across the state. I'd just like to thank you for your consideration of this bill.
Thank you, testifiers. Any questions for the
testify as a representative person?
Yes, so if I can just, this is, you know, this is really using money we'd otherwise, that we spend anyway as a state for janitorial services and those kind of things, and letting folks with disabilities in these programs actually perform those services. So it's kind of a win-win in that way. We did give this organization startup money last year. They need 3 years, and that was kind of the explanation last year, to get to self-sufficiency. And so this actually will, the request from the state will expire in 2 more years. It's a $150,000 request to continue that. I think it's a really good investment, something we are doing right now, and I think it'll pay dividends for all of us in saving costs in the future as well. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Thiessen, and thank you for coming and appearing before our committee. No further questions then. Representative Mahoney renews his motion that House File Number 785 be held over for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill.
Thank you.
Representative Mahoney? Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House File 927 for, I believe it has to go to finance. It's got kind of licensing and requires fees. So
correct, that's what I had
to go to finance. I also have one written amendment, and then I have a verbal amendment also. The A2 amendment, and I'd actually like to get the bill. How about if I explain it and then we can vote on it, if that's okay?
I'm just being told by staff that the version that we have in our committee packets mm-hmm. may not be the most recent version. Is that accurate?
The A2 amendment is not the most recent?
The bill itself.
Mr. Chair and Representative Mahoney, the A2 amendment is drafted to the most current version of the bill. It's just that the copy that members have is not the current version of the bill.
So I would ask for a little guidance from staff. Should I just go ahead and explain this particular amendment?
I'm going to
go ahead and explain this particular amendment. The H amendment is actually Representative Thiessen's bill on medical gases. What's been the problem is that medical gases is primarily installed by plumbers, but the plumbing inspectors say they don't have it in law that they are supposed to, that it's in their code, so they can't inspect it. So when you call the fire, because it is underneath the National Fire Protection Code, so when you call the fire marshal doesn't come out until the building is up and sheetrock's on and everything's been tested, and you can't see where the piping is. So fire inspectors were fine with this going to the plumbing code. It doesn't do anything to stop a fire or anything. And it just basically puts medical gases into the plumbing code and requires a fee for medical gas certificate issued by the plumbing board according to subdivision 2 for $30 per year. And it doesn't specify whether it is a one-year license. It doesn't specify how often it has to be renewed, because the department is now trying to go to a two-year renewal cycle, so it would be a $60 fee at purchasing when you purchase the license for 2 years. So that's the A2 amendment.
So Representative Mahoney issues an author's amendment, H0927A2, and members are advised that the first engrossment of H0927, the bill to which the amendment refers, is actually the first engrossment, not the second.
Yeah.
And I believe we're making copies of the second engrossment, so if we could, I guess, perhaps move ahead and vote on Representative Mahoney's amendment for inclusion, so we've got the bill in the form that the author wants it in. Any discussion?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Could maybe Ms. Newman explain the difference between the first and second engrossment, and so we'd understand what
thank you.
You're doing a really good job.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, there were three bills incorporated into House File 927. It was Representative Gunther's school boiler continuing education language, Representative Hillstrom's plumbing inspector language that says to be an inspector in Minnesota you have to be a licensed plumber and have 5 years experience. Representative Nelson's plumbing board language, which gives the plumbing board authority over continuing education for plumbers. And I think those were the three bills incorporated. So those are that's the difference between the bill version you have and what would be in the second engrossment.
And Mr. Chair, there's one other amendment that was put on. It was the cities that come forth. There's a lawsuit. Cities that typically had a length of time that you could leave your house when you were remodeling unsighted. Court said, no, you don't. It's not anywhere in the statutes. It now is in. We put that amendment into this particular bill yesterday, and it is. I can tell you where it is in the second engrossment, but it gives them 180 days to get their siding on, and by that they can apply for an extension if they need it.
Representative Rukidina.
And Mr. Chair and Representative Mahoney, you've worked all of these, those three bills that were mentioned and the amendments, plus your bill. You've worked with the Department of Labor and Industry, and is there any opposition to the bill at all?
There's no opposition to the bill, but none that I have heard of. It does have a couple of controversial issues in it, but we're working through those. The one controversial issue would be the water conditioners.
So, Representative Mahoney has a motion to adopt the amendment, the author's amendment, H0927A2, and that is presently the motion before us. So if there's no further discussion, I would ask for an affirmative vote to allow Representative Mahoney to bring the bill to us in the form that the author wishes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. So we have the bill before us in the form you want, with the exception that the original bill we are still awaiting.
Mr. Chair and members, okay. Are we going to get the... Okay, then I'm going to do...
Apparently not.
Okay. Representative Gunther's bill, which was the school engineer operating, school engineers training bill, caused some controversy and would force this bill into the K-12 finance. So that is Section 18 in the second committee engrossment. And in order so that it does not go to K-12 finance, we are going to delete that today, and we will work with the K-12 committee separately, Representative Gunther and I. So, and what that does, that amendment or that bill provided training for janitorial staff at school in their boiler room and maintenance. There's some question as to cost, and the boiler inspectors at the Department of Dolly comfortable doing the training. The school board still thinks that it's going to cost some money, but no one seems to be able to find out where. But we'll take it out for now. So I would ask that on the Section 18 of the second committee engrossment be deleted, and the other sections be renumbered.
Representative Mahoney, I'm wondering if we can, you know, and if that's not controversial, and that's Representative Gunther's wish, as it is, I can see. I don't know how they'll make motions to delete part of a bill that we don't have in front of us. So what I'm thinking here is, can we just lay this over? We'll take it up right away when we have the actual bill on
Tuesday, and then, and if there are any other questions on the full bill, since it's really not controversial, we should be able to get the bill out right away. But do you need it in finance? And that's the question.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I was just informed that if we do that, it won't make deadline. It has to go to government operations just yet.
Tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
So what the committee's wish is, if the bill isn't controversial, we have the summary in front of us, so no, we're not voting on anything that's trying to pull the wool over anybody's eyes. We've explained the bill. We have the amendment then put on the second engrossment, and we have the motion then to delete the entire part of the Gunther.
That is correct. Section 18, and then renumber as accorded. As
okay. So we will vote on that, and if that's okay with everybody here. So we're voting then to remove Section 18 of the second engrossment of House File 927, and you know the motion. Then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. That motion prevails. So we have those two amendments to the bill then. And are there any other parts to the bill that we should know about? And is the committee comfortable with the way we're doing this, then?
No, but they shouldn't be. But
no.
Is the committee okay with what we're doing here? Because we will see the majority of the bill, and the other parts that were added were explained by counsel. And is Mr. Rakowski here?
Yeah.
And Mr. Rakowski, if you just want to come up and you know, comfort all of us that they've worked with you, that the Department of Labor and Industry has no opposition to the bill as it would be now, maybe everybody will feel a little more comfortable with it. Mr. Rakowski?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, this bill did have what I call a full and fair and thorough hearing yesterday in Representative Mahoney's committee, and we're completely comfortable with all aspects of the bill as it sits today.
And is there any known, Mr. Rakowski, opposition to the bill that you know of? Oh, we have we got copies. We got a bill here. Here we go.
Now we get a bill.
Mr. Rakowski, any known opposition to the bill as it currently
stands?
No,
Mr. Chairman.
Okay. So, Representative Mahoney, my last question to you would be, in the past, there's been some MSHA concerns with the Mining Safety Health Act. There's nothing in here now that is going to be dealing with any type of plumbing or anything in the mines.
Mr. Chair, there's nothing in this bill that will be affect the mines.
Okay. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Mahoney, you mentioned the one piece on it that has raised some eyebrows is the water conditioning part, and I'm trying to remember, I think it was just 2 years ago that we did something similar for a different segment that we came back the next year and then had to make all these changes because all of the greater Minnesota small towns people were upset. Is this the same thing, and have we already put the corrections in place so that we aren't going to come back a year from now?
Well, Mr. Mahoney, I think I can answer that one. That one was controversial going in. We knew that there was a little fight.
Okay.
This one, there is no controversy.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, in that particular bill that you spoke to a couple of years ago, we removed the exemption for towns under 5,000 from the from the state plumbing code. This bill, the one thing we neglected at that time, and that industry came to us and said we are a little upset, we want to be included, was the water conditioning board, water conditioning industry. That is the Kinetico and Commerce and everybody else. And even some of the small town ones have come to us and said we'd like to be included in that license. That license is it's in the bill, but I will tell you that you have to take a license. You have to take a license exam, which costs $50. A contractor's license after the exam is $70, so that would be a total of $130. An installer's license is $35 plus the exam, or $85. And the department, they've actually had to go through this, so now they actually have kind of a template. of how to do all that, they will be contacting the suppliers. They will be contacting anybody who has had any kind of license or connection with that in the past. They'll be connecting up with hardware stores, resorts. I know there's a couple others. And yes, we came back last year for the restricted plumber's license, and I'm even getting them now. But what I have done is I've gone back and asked the departments, have you sent these letters out? Show me where you sent these letters out. They've been going out. People just think they're junk mail and throw them away. They will have to go through that again. And okay. They have made a commitment to do that. And as I said in the committee yesterday, next year we're going to have a lot of you saying, my guys didn't get notified. And we'll probably have to make another area of window for it. So for the next couple of years, we'll be trying to move this through. But we're working on that controversy. We're trying to get everybody underneath the same rules and regulations.
Okay, Representative Mahoney, we renew this motion and that House File 927, the second engrossment, as amended, recommended to pass and re-referred to the full Finance Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Members, we got to recognize our new Director of the Office of Higher Education up there. Mr. Metzen, stand up, and we'll try to take up that bill that Representative Nordis had right away on the committee's coming in, so.
I thought we could do it,
but. Mr. Chair?
We'll take it up right away.
We set this to finance. Did we send this to finance, or did we have to send this to government operations?
Finance. Okay. Finance. It came to finance. And members, one last thing before you leave. We have a motion. Representative Briner had a bill last week that we laid over for possible inclusion. It was the bill dealing with Representative Briner. Why don't you explain it and explain?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With House File 1048, which was regarding unemployment compensation through the federal grant WIRED program in 36 counties in Minnesota that have these grants toward renewable energy so that employees can allow their employers to go to school and receive unemployment compensation for a small portion of their day. It's supported by Deed fully, and we want to, it's held over for inclusion, but we also want to move it to the floor because it's going to save jobs. Already we're losing jobs that could be saved through this partnership, so we're asking to move it to finance.
So it's on page 2 of today's minutes, of the minutes today that are from Tuesday's March 24th meeting, and if you see the motion, what we'll do then, Representative Briner's moves to that House File 1048 be recommended to pass, which it was, and that we re-refer it to the full Finance Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And that motion prevails. Meeting adjourned. We'll see you on Tuesday.